Good morning, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a conversation with State Auditor Keith Faber, also the Republican nominee for Ohio Attorney General, who is in Findlay to speak with local business leaders at yesterday's Chamber of Commerce Legislative Roundtable. Also this morning, looking for your next great podcast obsession? In Sleuth and Surgeon, a neurologist and corporate espionage expert use observational investigation and real science to rewrite the true crime formula. And we have details on some important informational programs and workshops for seniors at 50 North in the coming weeks about elder abuse, grief recovery, and more. Gary Bright will tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, July 9th, 2026. So you remember your New Year's resolution? It's been a while, right? When was the last time you sort of revisited that? You'd go into the year with the best of intentions to hit the gym, get your steps in, all of that, and then, you know, life happens. Well, behavioral economists at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business say this is actually a better time to set those goals. So whether it's fitness or whether it's a financial goal, whatever it might happen to be, the middle part of the year, actually a better time to set those goals. They also say you might try your birthday, depending on when your birthday is. That would work, or really any meaningful time of the year. But the new year is generally not a good time because there's so many other things going on. You're so stressed out. We talk about this at the start of every year coming up to New Year's about New Year's resolutions and whether or not it's a good idea to set those or even bother. But whenever you decide to do it, I say make the goals specific and measurable instead of saying I'll go to the gym more often. Say something like I'll work out 3 days a week for the next few months or whatever. As specific as you can get usually is better. But I thought that was kind of interesting, the story that the Wharton School of Business, they put this out just this week, reminding people, oh yeah, those New Year's resolutions, I remember that. Whatever happened to those? By the way, speaking of fitness and weight loss and all of that, a new Gallup poll shows that a record number of Americans are now taking GLP-1 medications for weight loss. And of course, this has been the big story the past couple of years. These GLP-1s, miracle drugs for weight loss. According to the poll, 11% of Americans currently take GLP-1s compared to just 3% in 2024. So in the past 2 weeks, the past 2 years, it's gone from 3% to 11%. That's a pretty big jump. And they also found 15% said that they had taken the medicine for weight loss at some point. And that is an increase of 9 percentage points. As GLP-1 usage increases, it also appears that it is working. The adult obesity rate has gradually dropped from 36.4%, while diabetes diagnoses are also steadying now. For many years, we were seeing year-over-year growth in the number of diabetes cases. That has now plateaued, or is at least steadying out. Maybe not plateaued yet, but it's becoming more steady. Researchers suggest that declining obesity can be credited, yes, in part, to GLP-1 drugs, but the wider accessibility of the medication, although they are quick to point out that there are other likely factors as well. But I got to think, this got to be the number one contributor, don't you think? I mean, there's nothing else that has really changed in the past couple of years other than the availability of GLP-1s. We're seeing that obesity rates are actually dropping. So say what you will about it, and it's not cheap, but it appears to be effective. Speaking of your health, I saw this story on the Health Wire this morning. New research suggesting that if you want to slow down the aging of your brain, and don't we all, Learn a new language. Multilingualism. That's a tough word to say this early in the morning. Multilingualism. Speaking more than one language. Significantly. Not just slows brain aging, significantly slows brain aging. The scientists say they analyzed brain connectivity in nearly 900 people. And this actually, this research was done in Spain, but, you know, humans are humans. They were all the same, but they chose Spain. And I guess the Basque region in Spain, because many people there speak as many as four different languages. And the results, they say, were striking. Bilingual speakers had brains appearing 6 years younger than those who spoke only one language. Three language speakers gained 7 years, and four language speakers showed brains nearly 13 years younger than their biological age. So learn a new language. Even if you already know one, learn another one. The study found that earlier language acquisition and higher fluency amplified the benefits. So, tell your kids to learn a new language. It'll help them out later in life. They will thank you. Researchers plan future studies focusing on neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, because that's what they're thinking. You know, it may have an impact. So anyway, experts note the findings support language learning at school and throughout life, even if it's hard. And I would suggest, and I'm no neurologist, I'm no expert, but it would seem that because it is hard, that's probably where the benefit comes from, because you're working your brain harder. We've always been told our brain is like any other organ, any other muscle in our body. You have to exercise it in order to keep it healthy, and learning a new language certainly will exercise your brain. So, could be anything, but learning a new language, certainly. And a couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This is a great story for the first thing right out of the gate when you first wake up. This is what you need to hear. Apparently, it doesn't take much to make our day. A new survey finds that life's little unexpected moments, those little victories, are powerful mood boosters that can lift our spirits for the entire rest of the day. Some of the top little victories in this survey: on-time deliveries, finding a parking spot easily. Finding a good parking, you can always find a parking spot in the back of the parking lot, right, where you have to walk a mile to get to the store. But when you find one right up front, that is a little victory. That can make your day. Getting home just before the rain starts. If you've ever had that happen, you pull in the driveway, you get out of your car, you get inside, and then the skies unload. That is a little victory there. Beating Mother Nature. Those were the top three. On-time deliveries, finding a parking spot easily, and getting home just before the rain. Some of the others in the survey. Getting a streak of green lights when you're going someplace. You're going to work or coming home after work or whatever, and you hit every green light along the way. I got to admit, that is a pretty good feeling when that happens. Doesn't happen very often, but when it does. Managing to park perfectly for the first time. Rather than you have to pull in and then back out and line yourself up and being able to pull in and park perfectly the first time. It's the little things. Let's see here. Being the first in line when a new cashier opens at a busy supermarket. And that's happening less and less frequently with the proliferation of self-checkout. But when it does happen, that is a big deal. Not having to wait for a table at a restaurant. As you walk right in, table for two, please, and right this way. That is a pretty good feeling when you don't have to wait. And realizing it is Thursday. Somebody said, realizing it is Thursday when I thought all day it was Wednesday. That is only topped by realizing it is Friday when all day long you thought it was Thursday. But, you know, because today is Thursday, that kind of caught my eye. Realizing it's Thursday. I thought all day it was Wednesday. So it is Thursday. today. So we're almost there. There's little things that make our day. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, World Cup resumes today. The first of the quarterfinal matches will be today. And Fox says it has been a really great World Cup in terms of ratings, especially for Monday's broadcast of the USA game in which they lost. They crashed out of the World Cup against Belgium. But there was an awful lot of hype leading up to it, and an awful lot of people tuned in. The broadcast on Monday earned an average viewership, Fox says, of 30 million people, topping out at 36.8 million viewers. Now, I would imagine that was before Belgium scored their third goal, and it really, and that pretty much sealed it. I would imagine the audience dropped off precipitously after that, but 36.8 million viewers was the top line number. That ratings figure, far greater than any other sporting event except for the NFL. So you think NBA, NHL, Stanley Cup Finals, World Series, All-Star Game, you know, all of that. The only thing that beat that was the NFL. And I realize it's just a, you know, it's not a one-off. It is a one-off. It's not an ongoing thing. And this is a special circumstance. It's the World Cup. It only happens every 4 years. And there was a lot of hype with Team USA. But that's pretty good showing there for it. And you know who else is cashing in on the World Cup? Google. The Senior Vice President of Knowledge and Information for Google, Nick Fox, posted this on X yesterday. He said, Google search broke all prior usage records and saw its highest usage in history right after Argentina scored their winning goal in their match against Egypt. And that was just a terrific moment of the World Cup. But Google search broke all prior records and saw its highest usage in history at that moment. That is pretty impressive. Big, big stuff, the World Cup. for Google, even. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly sunny today with a high in the upper 80s. Showers possible tonight, low in the 60s. The number of confirmed cases of the intestinal illness cyclosporiasis continues to rise in Northwest Ohio. Dr. Brian Kaminsky, VP of Medical Affairs at ProMedica, says while very uncomfortable, the illness is rarely fatal.
Most people recover at home, so that's what we expect most people to do, and that's what we're seeing. Very rarely people get admitted to the hospital, and it's really, really unlikely to be a fatal illness.
He says since the outbreak began on June 21st, there have been more than 500 cases across both Ohio and Michigan. Get more on our website. Officials say bids have been received for two crucial flood mitigation projects in Findlay, the Eagle Creek Floodwater Storage Basin and the additional hydraulic improvements, the benching. The bids are now being evaluated by the Maumee Watershed Conservancy District and Stantec. Additionally, the Norfolk Southern Railroad Bridge over the Blanchard River west of Corey Street in downtown Findlay is slated for replacement, which will reduce a pinch point in the river. Officials say the full set of major flood mitigation projects targets a reduction of up to 3 feet in a 100-year flood event in downtown Findlay. Get more on our website. Deitch Brothers will be expanding its operation at 400 West Main Cross in Findlay. The company, renowned for its chocolates and ice cream, is purchasing the old Hostetler property just to the west of their parking lot. Vice President Erica Deitch Brokamp says the expansion will give them more workspace and production room.
The front retail spaces, for now, the plan is to keep them the same. One of the things that we are looking at maybe doing, and I don't know for sure, but we're hoping to be able to add an outdoor patio with some seating out there.
She says the expansion will also allow them to make the parking lot bigger. Get more of our conversation with Erica about their expansion in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news anytime at WFIN.com.
Now, our cover story this morning. Yesterday, State Auditor Keith Faber, who also happens to be the Republican nominee for Ohio Attorney General in the November election, was in Findlay to speak with local business leaders at the latest Chamber of Commerce Legislative Roundtable. Ahead of that event, he was kind enough to give us a few minutes as well. What is your message to those in the audience?
Well, what I always do is I start out by reminding people that State Auditor's Office, as auditor, I don't audit individuals, I don't audit businesses, and I have absolutely nothing to do with taxes. I get to be your watchdog over people who spend your tax dollars. And since I've been the auditor of state now, we've convicted, and my office has a criminal division for this purpose, 167 public officials who are lying, stealing, and cheating with government money. And that means people who work in government, people who are elected officials. But with regard to the fraud overall that people are talking about in government, I always tell people I audit agencies. I don't look at beneficiary fraud. So if somebody is stealing food stamps, I don't necessarily look at that directly from the beneficiary's perspective. We look at it from the agency's perspective. And then it's the agency's responsibility to put controls in place to catch and stop people from defrauding the agencies. Unfortunately, our agencies have been doing a very good job of that. We just did a review of the food stamp program, the SNAP program, and identified that more than 3,000 people on that program have purchased or acquired a brand new automobile, including luxury brands, while they were on food stamps. If you have money to make a $400 to $800 a month car payment, you probably don't need food assistance. Well, and so that's the kind of thing that we need to be more vigilant on.
Since you brought it up, I wanted to talk a little bit about this, because obviously this has been making big headlines, not just in Ohio, but elsewhere as well. Last month, you testified to the House Task Force on Medicaid Fraud, Waste, and Abuse. How widespread is that problem in the Buckeye State?
Well, it certainly exists. We know that anytime that there's a big government program, you're going to have people trying to figure out how to lie, steal, and cheat against it. And one of the things I'm really kind of disappointed in, and we've been noting it since 2019, is the Department of Medicaid has not been taking some of our reports as seriously as they should and trying to root out this waste, fraud, and abuse. Now, some of the problems you hear and see on the news may not be direct fraud, things that I can put somebody in prison for. Some are, but some of them appear to be waste in the program. And one of the examples I give is that apparently the Medicaid home health program allows people to be paid for companionship care of their family members, somebody literally being paid to watch Jeopardy with grandma. And look, I get it. All of those things are important if we're going to try and keep people in their home and out of nursing homes. However, I just think it's a bad public policy to be paying family members to provide companionship care and spend time with their family members. I just think that that is stupid policy. And when I say sometimes policies are just stupid, and we have to bring light to those to get the legislature to fix them.
Now, the other side, obviously we're in an election year, and the other side is pointing out on this topic that Republicans have held all the state offices, the governor's seat, and a supermajority in the legislature for years now. Why shouldn't people blame the GOP for, if not creating the problem, not doing more to stop it?
Well, this isn't a Republican problem or a Democrat problem. It's a big government program problem. And you need to stop and recognize that almost all of these programs are certainly administered at the state level, but they're also administered at the county level and the local level are the ones who determine qualifications and eligibility. And the state has been sending a lot of notices on some of the issues and they're being ignored by the local community. But it goes beyond that. Look, we can point fingers all day, and I have been doing that now for 7 years as state auditor. And one of the legislators asked when I testified, Keith, you've been ringing the bell. What can we do to better know about these bells? I said, well, I'll get a bigger bell. But at some point, it does fall on the legislators and the people responsible for administering the programs to take these concerns seriously. And part of it is, you know, the programs, particularly during COVID, were told just get the money out the door. Well, we're well beyond COVID now. And anytime you have a program that just gets the money out, us as taxpayers should not be surprised when we're being fleeced.
The other aspect of the waste, fraud, and abuse accusation, or that topic, kind of touches on another hot button issue in Ohio, and I want to get your perspective on this. And that is the effort to abolish property taxes in the state. Proponents of that effort have claimed from the beginning that if you eliminate all the waste, fraud, and abuse, you could do away with property taxes and not have to raise other taxes to make up for it. Are they correct in that assertion?
Certainly eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse will help lower everybody's contribution and everybody's taxes. But property tax generate between $21 and $23 billion a year. Even at best, over my time as auditor, I've identified now about $12.5 billion in waste, fraud, and abuse. And that's not annual. That's collectively. A big part of that was in the unemployment compensation fraud that we were the first office in the country to identify. And we led the procedures that tightened that down and stopped a lot of that program fraud. And we think we saved close to $6.9 billion by doing that. And so that's certainly part of it. But I don't think eliminating property taxes is going to solve the government whole just by waste, fraud, and abuse. It's going to take substantial changes in the way we do state government and the way we do local government. Because remember, all property taxes go to local governments. Most of it goes to school districts. You know, we all want great schools. We all love our schools. And so the school districts are the ones that are the largest consumer of property taxes.
As we mentioned, you are also the Republican nominee to be the next attorney general. And I know election law kind of limits how much you can say about the campaign in this setting. But obviously, events like your visit to town are aimed at also keeping you out in front of voters come November. What do you bring to the table when it comes to the next office that you are seeking as attorney general?
Well, I bring to the table a vast host of experience. I am probably one of the most experienced individuals to run for attorney general in certainly a long time, both having served in the legislature and having been state auditor and having had an active law practice, including I think I'm the only candidate that's actively prosecuted criminals. Having said that, one of the things about being state auditor is I get to watch over Ohioans' tax dollars. The attorney general is just a broader platform where you get to help protect Ohioans from people who want to take advantage of them, not just with government money, but take advantage of their own money. And that's why we're talking about things like cyber fraud and going after the cyber fraudsters and the people who are committing elder abuse, trying to take advantage of our senior citizens and prey on them. That's why I'm talking actively about creating a healthcare healthcare insurance claims denial mediation program to help consumers fight back against unfair and unjust insurance claims denials when you've had insurance. Those are the kind of things that we can do to make Ohio more affordable for Bob and Betty Buckeye. But at the same time, there's a reason that over 90% of the county sheriffs in this state have endorsed me for the next attorney general. There's a reason that over 60% of the county prosecutors in Ohio have endorsed me to be the next attorney general. It's because they know I'll have the back of law enforcement. And one of the most important things that an attorney general will do is serve as a conduit for Ohio law enforcement. You run the state crime lab, you run the certification agency for law enforcement. All of those are very important. And our law enforcement needs somebody who's going to have their backs to keep our community safe. And unfortunately, too much in the progressive left have been about undercutting and underfunding law enforcement, and our community safety has gone down. You don't need to look very far, just north of Toledo, to see what happened in that shooting at the community festival, or down to Cincinnati on opening day to see the roaming bands of thugs trying to prey on citizens, or to Bexley or to Cleveland. I'm going to be going to a funeral of a fallen officer on Friday. We've got to restore the respect to law enforcement, and the law enforcement communities in the state know I'll have their back to do that.
Again, State Auditor Keith Faber with us this morning. Thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, and it's great to be up here in Northwest Ohio.
Our conversation yesterday with Auditor Faber, who was in town, again, for the Chamber of Commerce latest legislative roundtable. You can learn more about the work of the State Auditor at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net. Well, if you are looking for the next great podcast, podcast, you want to check out Sleuth and Surgeon, where hosts TK Masters and Dr. M combine observational investigation with real science, rewriting the true crime formula. And I have to start, first of all, thank you both for taking the time. I have to start with this question I'm really curious about. TK, you are a corporate espionage expert by trade. Dr. M, you are a neurosurgeon and attorney, which is an interesting combination all on its own. But I'm curious, how did the two of you get together on this?
Well, we actually met at a Christmas party years ago. And so TK was doing a fraud investigation for this CPA firm that had the party. I was using the CPA firm, and we were talking, and she had this fascinating case in a small town in Texas. And we got to discussing it, and I said, we've got to do a podcast.
Two Horse Sleigh is fascinating. It's complex and it's stunning. And that there were three separate law enforcement agencies who completely disregarded the findings of a forensic pathologist and stood by their ruling that the horse killed Nancy.
Yeah. So you're talking about the first series in this new podcast. So just kind of back up a little bit here. The series is called Two Horse Sleigh, in which a woman is found dead in a horse stall with a 4-inch slash across her throat. Tell us about this case and what you discovered when you took a closer look.
Well, it's fascinating. You're right. She was slashed across the throat. She had three stab wounds to the back. Her pants were neatly slit. That's just a start. I mean, you can see all the autopsy diagrams. We have photos from the stall, et cetera, on our YouTube at Sleuth and Surgeon. And the forensic pathologist also, we interview her, and she goes through the autopsy and ruled it a homicide. And yet you had these law enforcement agencies saying, oh no, the horse did it.
Did they really believe that? I mean, that sounds almost impossible to believe.
Well, and it is. That's what's so mind-boggling about this case. And to the point where the murderer was allowed to murder again.
And he still remains at large. He did escape from TDC and has not been reapprehended.
So talk a little bit about the tactics in terms of, you know, tracking and surveillance that you use to hunt down the evidence in this case that you say have been long buried.
Well, tragically, all of the evidence that law enforcement needed at the time, 20 years ago, was available to them. They waited years to run a sexual assault kit. And from the crime scene alone, if someone saw her in the stall, you would know she had been murdered. Her throat was slit. Again, as Dr. M said, three stab wounds to the back, and they were relentless and demanding that the pathologist, forensic pathologist, changed her ruling.
Now, Dr. M, as we mentioned, you have a dual degree in neurosurgery and law. How does that help you uncover the evidence, forensic evidence and so on, and find and uncover the errors in this case that, again, were either overlooked, ignored, not recognized? What's going on here?
Well, I think it helps immensely to understand the medicine and point out the legal aspects of this case. You can go, and we share that with the audience. We go through and we analyze, like, for instance, we discuss the DNA and what that analysis, and we break it down so it's easy to understand, but we share that with the audience, or any legal loopholes that exist. And so all of that's broken down, and it helps the audience understand the case. We don't just say, well, this happened, that happened. We take a deep dive.
Is that what makes this different? Because I was going to ask, there are an awful lot of true crime podcasts out there. I think this is like the top category for podcasting in general. So what makes this one different?
We're the only two hosts that have our credentials. And again, we've spent our entire working lives, in the very disciplines that provide greater depth and the insight and understanding into the cases that we share with the audience.
Were you kind of surprised that yours is unique in that way? I mean, you know, obviously a lot of great storytellers out there, but you have that professional clinical analysis.
Right. And it is unique. There is nobody else. And so it really enriches the detail for the case. We're not, as I said, saying this happened or that happened. Mm-hmm. We go into this in much greater detail and the audience learns things.
Yeah.
And a lot of people love forensics. They love the legal. That's why those are two of the most popular shows and detective shows.
Yeah, it is certainly fascinating stuff. Again, this is the first series in this new podcast, Two Horse Slay. The podcast itself is called Sleuth and Surgeon because the hosts are a sleuth and a surgeon. So you can kind of see where that comes. And folks can find you pretty much anywhere they get their podcasts, right?
Right. Listen wherever you get your podcast.
And our website, sleuthandsurgeon.com, and as well as YouTube at Sleuth and Surgeon.
Where you can listen and watch on YouTube because we have great, great visuals. Mm-hmm. Autopsy reports, crime scene photos.
Yes.
And I understand that you are already working on the second case for this podcast. It's called Ode to Alexander. Let's kind of tease that a little bit. What's going on here?
Ode to Alexander comes out July 22nd. It's a very tragic case. A baby was murdered. We delve into the intra-family dynamics that were at play. We also interview the mother. She is very powerful, very inspiring. It is a must listen.
We will put the link up at our webpage to the Sleuth and Surgeon podcast. Hosts TK Masters and Dr. M with us this morning. Worth checking out. Thank you both for taking the time. Best of luck with the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Once again, more broken news from close to home. I'll tell you what, folks in Ohio, dumb people in Ohio, have been on a roll lately. We had a lot of local or regional broken news of late. Police in Dayton say a teenager accidentally shot himself while trying to steal a car. Once again, maybe a life of crime is not for you. Officers responded to a call from a man who said two people were attempting to steal his vehicle. The victim of the car theft told officials that he confronted the suspects inside his car and one of them pulled out a gun, I would imagine to try to shoot him, but instead ended up shooting himself. The story goes on to say the suspects then drove themselves to the hospital. I don't know if they drove themselves to the hospital in the car they were trying to steal. But maybe a life of crime is not for you. Elsewhere in the broken news, in Columbia, Missouri, when 22-year-old Ethan Zane Adams was arrested for DWI in 2024, a judge set bond at $3,000, which a local bail bond company posted. That's usually the way it works. The company, bail bond company, gifted Mr. Adams a promotional T-shirt upon release. Their policy states, whenever we bond you, you get a T-shirt for free. Then at trial, Mr. Adams was placed on 2 years probation. Well, last month, he skipped a court hearing, which prompted an arrest warrant for probation violation. Deputies caught up to him a week later, and when he posed for his latest mugshot, he was still wearing the Jesus BB Bail Bonds T-shirt. He was wearing the T-shirt in his new mugshot. He now faces a $6,000 bond and apparently no further help from the company. Sorry, not helping you out this time, but thanks for the promotion. Oh, my. Where's the love? You give them the promotion, you wear their T-shirt and your mugshot. They won't even help you bail out of jail. My goodness. And finally, in the broken news this morning, Dateline, Howard County, Maryland. And this is just a tip. When reporting a crime that has happened to you, you may want to make sure you're not also committing crimes. In Howard County, Maryland, police arrested a man for burglary after he reported that his own car was stolen. It seems that officers were investigating a break-in at a local store where they noticed blood on a smashed window. Minutes later, they got a call from a man across the street who reported a car theft. When questioning him about that crime, officers noticed blood on the man's hands, glasses, and shirt. They had blood at the shattered window of the break-in. They put two and two together, and although he initially denied he was at the store that was robbed, he was eventually arrested for burglary. As a post by the police department says, don't you just hate it when your car gets stolen while you're committing a burglary? I mean, his car did indeed get stolen while he was committing burglary. As the police department says, that's karma. That's what karma will get you. There you go. It's going to catch up to you eventually. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We're, of course, into a big travel and tourism season. We all have that dream vacation that we are going to take someday, right? Maybe it's just some exotic location. Maybe you're going to tour Europe or maybe even sail around the world. Whatever it might happen to be, that dream vacation that you're going to do someday. I've always dreamed of driving Route 66, the whole length of Route 66 in a classic car, you know, classic convertible, and drive it across the United States. It's that dream trip that I want to take someday. What is holding you back? Well, a survey of 2,000 adults age 50 and over found that money is the biggest barrier. That's not surprising, but really, that's only the excuse for 37% of those in the survey say money. 25% cite work commitments. A lot of us at that age still working, so obviously we don't have a month or two that we can, you know, globetrot around the world. Health concerns come into play for 22% of those in the survey. And still, despite those obstacles, 34% say they feel more inspired to travel now than ever, with the average person saying that they have not taken a vacation longer than 2 weeks in over 6 years. And I have to admit, it's been a long time since I've taken a vacation of more than a week max. But, you know, 2 weeks, it's been 6 years or more. And it's about time. 47% say they are ready to make up for lost time. All of these years, we've talked about taking a dream vacation or just talking about taking any vacation. Doesn't have to be that ultimate bucket list vacation. Just any good, solid vacation. More than just a weekend getaway. You know what I'm talking about? 47% say they are ready to make up for lost time. Meanwhile, 32% said having more disposable income would change their perspective, certainly. Again, money being one of the biggest barriers. And 38%, and this is the number that really jumped out at me on this survey. And again, this was for Americans age 50 and over. 38% feel as though it is now or never. We don't do it now. Not going to do it. So why wait? Time to get an update on what's happening at 50 North. And I want to talk about some important informational programs and workshops for seniors that are coming up in the next few weeks about things like elder abuse and grief recovery and lots more. Outreach Director Gary Bright is with us this morning. And first of all, you've got, we mentioned elder abuse. That is the topic for an informational session coming up here, what, I guess next week, is that right?
Yeah, July 14th. I didn't look at what day of the week that is, but it's, I know it's next week.
Yeah.
But yeah, July 14th, 10 a.m., we're going to have Adult Protective Services come in. And some people have maybe heard of that agency, and they kind of know in general terms what that means. They've heard the term elder abuse, or, you know, our team just went to a conference about that topic. It was called World Elder Abuse Day, kind of a recognition and conference awareness about that. But our locally, we have a case manager that works out of the Area Agency on Aging, who is the assigned person to handle Adult Protective Services reports. And so that'd be anybody who's 60 or older, who you suspect, you know, may be a victim of abuse, neglect, or exploitation. And exploitation is a lot bigger one lately. We're talking about, you know, scams, what maybe being taken advantage of by a neighbor, community member, family member, you know, whatever, romance scams, you know, all those kind of things. So any time you're concerned that a person 60 or over might be a victim of any of those kind of things, you can make a report to them. But basically, that's the reason they're coming in, is to help people understand better, you know, when is the appropriate time to call them? What can they expect in terms of a response? A lot of times people worry, you know, that if they call Adult Protective Services, you know, they're going to put the person in a nursing home automatically or something and take their home away. It's really the opposite. You know, what that agency actually works to try to keep the person as independent as possible and really just bring resources in, you know, to resolve the situation. They don't want to take that person's rights away by any stretch. So they work a lot with us and our case management team to bring those resources in just to kind of help the person as opposed to, you know, snatching them out of their home, which is, again, that's what a lot of people get worried about. I don't want to call and make a report, you know.
And
they'll be in, talk about that.
And I would imagine the other thing is, I know that you're going to talk about how to recognize the signs that this is going on, which I know is always a challenge with elder abuse and exploitation and neglect, because by their very nature, many seniors are more isolated. It is sort of one problem compounding another that really makes this a big challenge to try to stop. That's one of the reasons why they are exploited so often, because they are an easier target for that reason.
Yeah, that's right. So that's why we're doing this session, is just to help, you know, give people an opportunity to come in and hear directly from them and ask a lot of those questions. You know, if I see something that I think is going on, what's the best way for me to respond?
Right.
And who do I call? And again, what can I expect in terms of a response? Yeah, that's one.
That's coming up on July 14th, 10 a.m. Yeah. Then there's another one the following week on the outreach team and the services such that you provide. So kind of give us an overview of that.
Yeah, so we have a team, a lot of people, it's still kind of a not as well-known service as we would like it to be, but we have two full-time case managers as well as myself as the outreach director. So our department is called outreach. What we really are is we're case managers, you know, we're licensed social workers who provide all kinds of, you know, assistance to family members of older adults, you know, who are trying to kind of in that caregiver role, connecting people to concrete services like, you know, the emergency alert systems, medical equipment, referring them to community agencies, housing, you know, connecting them to housing, food resources, transportation resources. We help people negotiate Medicare open enrollment. Medicaid and Medicare sometimes, you know, we're trained to do that. So, but we really serve in Hancock County, you know, population's about 75,000, 38% of our population, the last census that I looked at, is 50 and over. So that's about 28,000 people that at any point could be giving us a call for just some assistance, because this is a, it's a publicly funded service, this case management services. There's no fee for it.
Mm-hmm.
We 57% of what we do is funded by levy services, which is actually a big reduction from what it used to be. We used to be a lot more reliant on levy dollars, but we're kind of trying to be sensitive to that whole.
So, like you said, a lot of people don't know the wealth and the breadth of the services that, that you can provide. So that's what that informational session is all about, learning about all of those services that are available. That on July 20th, or July 21st, rather, 1 p.m. In the afternoon. And then also want to real quickly mention the upcoming, we've talked about this in the past, but another grief recovery method workshop that is beginning in early August.
Right. And that one, Amy Krantz, again, is going to be facilitating that one. She's one of our case managers that's been trained, you know, certified to provide that program. And for that one, they can just call Amy directly, but the registration deadline is July 24th.
Okay.
For that one. But if they call, you know, if they call the agency, you know, they can get Amy's number, but it is 567-429-9263. I don't know if you have a way to get that across, but they can just kind of call Amy, explain their situation, see if it's kind of appropriate for that group. But she's trying to help people deal with any kind of grief. You know, it could be you have a loved one who has dementia or Parkinson's or something, and there's that loss of what the person used to be.
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of need to process through that new relationship you have with that person. It could be a divorce. It could be a literal death of a loved one. It could be pet loss. I mean, honestly, for a lot of people, their pets are, you know, very important to them.
Yeah.
So they deal with any kind of loss. So I'd really encourage people, if you're 50 or over and you have some kind of grief you want to process, that's a great place to do it.
It is a terrific program. And for that is, I know that's more than a one-day thing. That's like an eight-week series, a workshop. Is there a charge for that? You mentioned the registration deadline coming up later this month. Is there a cost for that program at all?
There is not. That's been covered by a grant that we got in cooperation. Really, it was a grant from Family Resource Center about a year ago that we got. So all the materials are provided. And yeah, it's a great resource. Eight-week course. They get the manual and everything along with it.
So, okay. We have a link to more information about all of these workshops and informational programs and such that are coming up in the coming weeks at 50 North. And once again, Outreach Director Gary Bright is with us this morning. Gary, thanks very much for the update. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Thanks to all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That is, of course, goodmornings.net. And if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would also appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well. And we thank you very much. Coming up tomorrow on the program, at a time when we're always connected, yet seemingly disconnected from each other, perhaps it's time to relearn the way of befriending and rediscover the joy of belonging. Plus, where compassion meets community, helping our neighbors bless up and bloom. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.